are listening to a free version of Majority Report with Sam Steeder. To support the show and get another 15 minutes of daily program, go to majority.fm, please.
The Majority Report with Sam Steeder.
It is Monday, September 19th, 2016. My name is Michael Brooks on a Michael Monday, and this is the four-time award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live steps from the industrially ravaged Gowanus Canal in the heartland of America, downtown Brooklyn, USA. On today's program, Ben Mankiewicz from the Young Turks, Turner Movie Classics, and What the Flick. We're talking about the media, Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump, the race titans. Who's to blame? The media, millennials, Hillary Clinton. We'll get to all of that. An arrest made in the terrorist attack in New York over the weekend. Ahmed Khan Rahmani is arrested in Manhattan. And in connection with the bombings in Chelsea, the bomb in Chelsea, as well as several other devices that were found near his home in Elizabeth, New Jersey. Also, a stabbing attack in Minnesota, which ISIS is claiming credit for. And of course, Donald Trump says, "I called it," because that's how you respond to terrorism. You say, "Nailed it," and then you demonize Muslims. Voters view a Trump presidency as big risks, big rewards. Saudi Arabia appears to be using white phosphorus supplied by the United States in its war on Yemen. We have been opening up the weapons depots for Saudi Arabia as they have pummeled the Yemeni civilian population in a supposed war against Houthi rebels. In many ways, one of the great untold humanitarian crises and abuses of the globe. And due to a massive intel error, the United States kills 80 Syrian troops and helps ISIL advance in Syria, jeopardizing the ceasefire. And further Middle East news, the United States and Israel have inked a massive military deal over the next several years, rewarding Israel's far-right intransigent government, and apparently, despite the Obama administration's exasperation with the Israeli extreme right, the weapons keep flowing. So, the Obama administration, even as it makes strides with Iran and bucks against the trend of our Middle East policy being centered on Israel and Saudi Arabia, still keeps the weapons flowing. And a swift response to a refugee crisis tests Obama after UN talks fail. There's a big UN refugee summit happening right now. And in good news, California Governor Jerry Brown last week signed overtime pay for agriculture workers. Are we back on YouTube, Matt?
Still working on that.
Still working on YouTube. We get the tweets. Don't worry. We'll get to YouTube. We'll be up and running as soon as possible. We don't know what the problem is. I'm wondering if I should actually save this copy then until we're on YouTube. Yeah. Yeah. All right. We'll do that when we get on after we're on YouTube. Let's see. We've gotten a bump in Two Dope Boys in a podcast recently. New people coming on board. Been hearing really good feedback. We had a great conversation with Douglas Rushkoff on throwing rocks at the Google bus, inequality, technology, and what does it mean to be human in the algorithm age? And just had a conversation on defining influence. What does influence actually mean when we talk about people who are influential on social media, politics, and arts? And this Tuesday, dropping tomorrow, Phil and I do a Chappelle Show retrospective and explain how Dave Chappelle influenced all of us. We go over our favorite sketches, and we had a really unexpectedly intense fight. coming off of our Charlie Hebdo beef from last Tuesday, which a lot of people have commented on. So look, if you haven't already, get on the train. Two Dope Boys and a podcast. Find it on iTunes. We're also on Stitcher. Might be releasing some standalones on the Majority Report YouTube channel. We don't have the logistics, though, to film the show. I know a lot of people have asked about that. That's in the pipeline for the future. We do have a ZipRecruiter ad, but I guess I'll read it after we talk with Ben. We'll take a bit of a longer break. Okay, we are going to be right back with Mr. Ben Mankiewicz on the Majority Report. See you in a couple of seconds. Yes, I am. Wow. Selassie, I give me the remedy, the fire pick up. I said, okay, first turn. Give me the remedy, the fire pick up. Welcome back to the Majority Report. I'm Michael Brooks. Joining us now is Ben Mankiewicz. He's a host for Turner Classic Movies, The Young Turks, and What the Flick. Ben, how you doing, man?
Michael, good to talk to you.
Just to let everybody know, we are YouTube-less at the moment, I guess for the rest of the show, but it will be put up later, so I know that it's painful and disappointing for everybody getting the tweets, but it just, you know, it was like today. I was on my way to work. It was pouring outside. I saw a guy kind of measuring the rain and whether or not he would step out of the laundromat or not. And we looked at each other and I just said, it is what it is. And he was like, yeah, man. So same deal.
We don't have experiences like that in Southern California. I'm not familiar with rain.
Right.
Sounds interesting.
It was because I was just out there and that's where we hung out because I went out to do TYT the other week. And I've been to LA before, but every time I go out there, it is a little disconcerting. It's just like, this is a desert with like a mall built on it.
And I grew up back east, so I lived in Charleston, South Carolina, and Miami, and New York, Boston, D.C. And so but when I go back now, and it rains, I still treat it as if it's like a snowstorm in May. You know, I'm like, no, look. I get my daughter. I'm like, no, look, it's totally falling from the sky. You put your hand, it gets wet. It's
That's what it felt like to me, honestly, after only being there for like 6 days. That's how it always feels out there.
You come to L.A. and you embrace everything about L.A. that you made fun of before. I couldn't enjoy... Yep. Talking about directions more, like no lie, no joke, no nothing. I want to know how everybody gets everywhere,
right?
And then I want to share my thoughts on it. And we love talking about the weather. It turns out everything they said about LA was true. But I got news for you; it's pretty awesome.
The New York equivalent is obviously the subway. Everybody loves like, oh no, you know, you got to take the Q because the Q is running well.
I love directions. I love directions.
And we are back on YouTube. So on that auspicious note, we can get to it. So Ben, you and I'm sure will piss some people off in this conversation. But I'm also just kind of curious in the frame for this in some ways is if Hillary Clinton loses, who is to blame? And I still don't think she's going to lose, but I do think that it's astonishing all of the variables that have come into place to – you know, not even make Trump surge, because that's not what's happening. Just what is happening in the polls is that this is becoming more of a normal election. And a normal election still favors a Democrat. But this sense that we kind of had in August, like, yeah, now normal people are tuning in, and Trump is unacceptable to them. Well, not really, because now Republicans are kind of flocking home. Democrats are unenthused. So take us from there. Talk about some of the new polls that you're looking at, and why do you think that this race is normalizing? Who's the kind of prime culprit in that?
Well, I mean, you know, it's a little hacky to blame the press, but of course,
let's blame the press.
We have to a little bit, and I mean as a general body. You know, there's no conspiracy. It's just that we love the horse race. Part of it. And I mean, I'm guilty of that too. So there's some hypocrisy in me blaming them for that. But we keep talking about, hey, why are we talking about the horse race and why don't you talk policy? I mean, there's one candidate who has extensive policy positions that are actually pretty progressive that are out there, and another candidate who's nothing. And yet, you know, good luck trying to find the last sort of significant mentions of Hillary's college plan, of her tax plan. Now, that's also her fault.
Yep.
You know, she took 2 months off and raised money, sort of feeding the exact negative stereotype that we already have about her, which is that she's just sort of a Wall Street tied fundraising machine. And that, so even if we did talk about the policies, we don't really trust her.
Right.
Right. And I don't, and you probably don't either, but I'm prepared to take that risk.
Yeah. That seems like a pretty obvious risk.
Right. It's an obvious risk, but but this is what we do. We normalize, and it turns out we'll normalize almost anything. You know, he has managed to push things so far without stepping on. He gets so close to a third rail, but he doesn't really step on it. He doesn't use the N-word, right? Mm. He doesn't, you know, he doesn't talk about the Jews in a pejorative way. All things that I think he is capable of doing, right? But he doesn't. And so we normalize everything because we, you know, it is in our nature to not sort of call out monsters in this situation, because how could he be a monster? He's the Republican nominee for president. And that's not what we do in America.
Yeah, but the flip side is, in some ways, like, how could he not be a monster? He's the Republican nominee. Because I think that there's, in some ways, like, there's a sort of tricky needle to thread here, and this always like offends the Republican friends I have, and believe it or not, I do have them, and some of them who are actually, you know, sort of pretty involved in things on that side of the equation. But I always thought, and certainly Sam always thought, that Donald Trump was a very, very likely winner of the Republican primary, because he came in, he said what people wanted to hear without this, you know, gave the subtext. And then paradoxically, this is the other thing that I think people are having a hard time gripping about Trump, is that, of course, it's all nonsense and it's all, you know, dishonest, and he doesn't have a plan. And, you know, he would, if he could, like, sort of personally defraud, each people, you know, at his campaign rallies, like, he probably would. You know what I mean? Like,
right.
Of course, it all goes without saying. He's a sort of extraordinarily bad person. But on the flip side, he was the one guy in a Republican primary saying, you know, these trade deals are terrible, you're getting screwed. And, you know, the only one not peddling the same fantasies, like, you know, everything has gotten worse for you in the last 4 years, but I'm here to, you know, promise you that the real answer is to, you know, vote about abortion or whatever. And if you could just bear with me and we can give rich people a little bit more money, all of a sudden your jobs will come back. And in a weird way, you know, he was the one calling BS on that. So how much do we say this is an extraordinary personal threat of this guy, which has been the strategy so far, and it doesn't appear to be working so effectively, versus, like, this guy is an extraordinary unique threat. He's also emblematic of a really problematic tendency that represents, you know, a little under half of American politics, and that's the Republican Party.
Yeah, I mean, the second people to blame for this are Republicans for the last sort of 30 years, who sort of created this guy,
right.
You know, by accident or intentionally. And he perfectly filled in the answers that they wanted to hear.
Yeah.
So, you know, I mean, yeah, I think the trade deals and saying that I know things have gotten worse for you and I'm the guy to fix it because I'm the guy who fixes things is part of it. But also there's blame.
Mm-hmm.
And they, since the sort of that right wing media machine got going in the 80s, that blame has been at times subtle and at times explicit. But it's, you know, it's what they've tried to do to Obama. It's the fault of the others. It's the fault of the people who are different. It's the fault of the people who are coming for your daughters, or coming to blow up your local mall. And it works. And he's great at it.
Right.
Just fantastic at it. And has this, and manages to tie it in with this sort of, aw shucks, I don't talk like a regular politician, I tell it straight. You know, it's the crazy way of thinking that had Rush Limbaugh say everybody wants Donovan McNabb to win a Super Bowl because he's a black quarterback.
Right.
And then when people got mad, he said, well, I guess if people are mad, I must be saying something right.
Or right. I must have my finger on the pulse.
You're saying something insane.
Right. 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 People are mad because you're an asshole. You were talking, though, we were about these new sort of Reuters Ipsos polls that came out over the weekend. And the other kind of aspect of this race is that, you know, the numbers, we were going state by state. So, you know, it looks like kind of Virginia is sort of actually still looking relatively normal and sort of in Hillary's column. Ohio's tight, but we always expected that would be pretty tight, but leaning slightly towards Hillary. But then in a place like New Mexico, Trump has a comfortable lead. I mean,
Yeah.
What's that about?
I don't know. And so that's the other thing, is that you almost have to solely talk about the horse race aspect of it, because the horse race is impossible to figure out and makes no sense.
Right.
So this polling comes out for Ipsos, and it makes, and there's some logical things to it. You know, South Carolina, Trump by 8, although that's not actually that much. But then you see some staggering numbers, like as I'm sure others have seen, Trump by 8 in Iowa. But then you see a good numbers for Hillary, still up 2 in North Carolina and up 9 in Virginia and up 9 in New Hampshire, which has been a state that has been hard to peg, and 10 in Minnesota, which would indicate that Wisconsin is probably fine. She's only up by 3 there. But then you mentioned it. So Colorado, all of a sudden, where a state Hillary gave up on, stopped investing money in because she thought it was under control, it has Trump by 3 in Colorado and Trump by 5 in New Mexico.
Yeah.
5. And that is, I don't believe it. But I am not only not a person who just doesn't believe polls I don't like, I shriek at others for doing just that. But I don't believe that. I just don't.
Stop shrieking at me.
Right. But maybe it's true. I just find it hard to believe that New Mexico could possibly go for Trump. But so that changes the map. These polls suggest that we could see an entirely different map, tied in Michigan, by the way. Normally, in a presidential election, obviously, if the Democrat is capable of winning North Carolina, well, then they didn't lose Pennsylvania, Michigan, Wisconsin, Iowa, New Hampshire.
Right.
They won easily. But maybe that is no longer true. By the way, this poll won, you know, if you're looking for encouraging signs for Hillary, you know, up 3 in Ohio.
Right.
But down 4 in Florida.
Yeah, I think Florida is actually the one that really, that's going to hold up. I think that might be one that's very hard for to hang on to. Let's move, though, to the sort of part of our equation, more of the sort of ecosystem we're in, where, of course, you're the preeminent Hillary campaign fluffer on left-wing media, as we discussed.
Yeah,
I mean, I was kind of amazed that T-Way, a lot of people don't know this, and I hate to blow up your spot like this, Ben, but in between breaks on the Young Turks, Ben was literally taking phone calls from Clinton HQ, and it's getting fed.
Yeah, they were just telling me to tighten my message here, go after the left harder here. Yeah, like I do what I'm told.
Yeah, Huma Abedin was literally personally calling him and telling him to. The smearing of Jill Stein was astonishing, even for me. But now that said, what I love is there's going to be a bunch of people who are like, "Yeah, well, at least they're honest."
Right.
Yeah,
It is really hard to take a position to spend your life thinking you're a progressive and to take a position that I don't think it's complicated. Hillary Clinton, you must vote for Hillary Clinton, and you must tell your neighbors to vote for Hillary Clinton. It's not enough to just vote for her. You have to advocate for her. If you want to advocate by saying, hey, look, I know she's going to be a giant disappointment, and this is another corporatist, centrist, moderate Republican we're electing as a Democrat.
Right.
You want to say that and then say, but Donald Trump must be stopped at all costs? Do it that way. That's essentially what I'm saying. But you can't sit on your hands and vote for Gary Johnson or Jill Stein. You can't do it. You can't do it. And we live in a world where saying that has now, you know, had us ostracized from the progressive party that we felt we were so welcome at.
Yeah, well, let's get to the specifics, though, because part of, I think, the problem is that there's a smart way of making that point, which you just did, and a lot of people will still throw up their hands and object. But then there are dumb ways of making that point, which go back to the primary and how – you know, because I was a fierce critic of Hillary's campaign during the primary and a strong supporter of Bernie Sanders. And I always made the point that it isn't just obviously I support Bernie because I'm left and I'm progressive and we need to do real things. And he was the candidate of that. But I also was constantly making the point that this is just like a bad harbinger. Like, they're not doing this well at all. And I want to point your attention to this. We've, you know, part of the reason, and again, it's important when we look at the polls, it's these are never polls where, other than, yes, more Republicans are just getting kind of comfortable with, yes, I'm going to vote my sort of nominee. So that's helping Trump. But there's no like cross spread or surge. I mean, his ceiling is still pretty, you know, steady. But but Hillary's losing votes to Gary Johnson, Jill Stein. And according, you know, to I think it was a recent New York Times poll, that number might be in the 30s now. And Clara Jeffrey, who's an editor at Mother Jones, she tweeted the poll out, and she said, "I've never hated millennials more." Then Kevin Drum, you know, picks that up and writes this piece saying, "Don't hate millennials, save it for Bernie Sanders." Now, we're going to get to some sound of Bernie Sanders in a second, but what struck me about this is, like, we have these two poles of relentless stupidity that have gotten established in the primary. We have the, like, you know, Hillary is Hitlery. She's a world historic, unique evil. You know, voting for her is tantamount to, like, you know, personally constructing a concentration camp, or, you know, sort of like just nonsense. And then on the other hand, though, we have this, like, part of this Hillary punditocracy is that there's never anything wrong. It's always unfair. Any type of critique of Hillary, no matter how merit-based, is, you know, is sinister or misogynist or whatever. And now we're out in September and the campaign is floundering and we still have pundits going back to blaming on Bernie Sanders for running an actual campaign, or blaming on millennials who you need to actually maybe educate about some parts of how the process works. But are voting on, you know, perfectly, like, they look at Hillary Clinton and not inaccurately say, "You were a major part of what has happened in the last several decades, and the results have not been good." So, of course, I'm not enthusiastic. I mean, it's not like an irrational position. They might lead to a mistaken conclusion, but the critique has all merits. And what do they get from Mother Jones editor? "I've never hated you more."
Yeah, I mean, again, I think that tweet was tongue in cheek, but I hear you. Yeah, no question. I saw Huffington posted a thing today about the a Hillary postmortem if she loses, and you know, all the people you could blame. One of them was Bernie Sanders, press, all the things we've talked about, but one of them was millennials. But their line was, "Damn you for being idealistic."
Right.
You know, so at least that was a kind way of putting it. We talked about this a little after the show and over the weekend, but, you know, those DNC emails, they don't show widespread corruption, but they do what they unquestionably show, what you can debate about, I suppose, what they show, but what they unquestionably show is how wrong these people were.
Right.
What a mistake they made in thinking that this was the more electable candidate. They were wrong. So at some point, these alleged geniuses running the Clinton campaign, you would hope now, as we're in middle of September, recognize that and start making an attempt to reach out. And honesty does it. I don't understand why Hillary, in saying about the TPP, "I was for it, and then I heard from my constituents and I realize now what they're saying about it, and I've changed my mind." I think those words would resonate. I think she would say, "Yeah, my college plan was not as was not as progressive as Bernie's, but I heard from you, and I think you're right now. I listen to the people who support me." I don't know why any politician doesn't do that.
Well, you know, when she most did that, Ben, was in her acceptance of the nomination, and that's, you know, when, and clearly she got a good bump from that convention.
Yeah, so I keep doing it. That's, you know, enough with the attempting to woo those who will be swayed by the support of Henry Kissinger and John Negroponte. Right. And let's go talk to these millennials. You're not going to get them all, but
the war criminal. They're like, I want to vote for Hillary. I'm concerned about Trump, but I would like the cosign of a war criminal before I can do that.
I would like a war criminal to sign up on this.
Yeah,
then I'll feel better about it. I just, you know, I mean, I think that wing of the reasonable wing of the Republican Party, the percentage of those that have recognized, you know, they've heard enough from Trump. Either they're deciding, "Nope, I'm still a Republican, and that means too many other good things that we believe in, and I'm going to go ahead and vote for him," or they've already made that call. obviously the apathetic voters, the voters who can be changed, are Gary Johnson and Jill Stein voters, who appear to be mostly Gary Johnson voters. Go after them and develop some degree of enthusiasm. You're not going to get Barack Obama level enthusiasm, but you need to start generating some and saying things like, I've never hated millennials more, and I realize the campaign didn't say that, is not going to do it. You got to go make an attempt to get them. You won't get them all, but you'll get some.
Well, and I think actually, and we're in a second, I want to play some Bernie sound for you that really sort of goes into this. But the other part of this that I think needs to be done much more aggressively is actually put Gary Johnson's record on the table. He seems like a nice guy, and you know, he doesn't know what Aleppo is, and he's high and whatever. That's kind of funny, and he probably, of the four people running, would probably be the most sort of fun to hang out with. But his record, I've talked about it. I had Mark Ames on a couple of months ago to talk about it. His record as governor of New Mexico is a fanatical libertarian ideologue, except not with any of the soft things that he's running on. He wasn't for decriminalizing drugs when he was governor of New Mexico. He's for privatizing prisons, slashing public spending, you know, all of the issues that have hurt millennials. And I think that doesn't just make them idealistic. I actually think it makes us literally like the first responders in some respects to decades of this neoliberal consensus. And it's really this first generation where it's just been sort of broadly felt as like, this just does not work across the board. He would only provide more of that. I mean, if you're worried about college tuition, what is Gary Johnson going to offer you? I mean, this has to be not just like, oh, he's the nice pot guy. It has to be like, he's actually the nice pot guy who will make you poor.
Yeah, and I think it works on a couple of levels, because it could get some conservatives to peel from Trump to Johnson, conceivably, by talking about how conservative he is, while at the same time perhaps loosening up some voters who feel unwilling to vote for Hillary because they've bought into this notion that she's something other than a mainstream American politician who we've created over the last 30 years, who is 6.8% more conservative than Barack Obama.
Mm-hmm. And which is all a problem, so what, right? Like, that's an indictment of the system more than her as a person.
Yeah, you think there is a dramatic difference between Joe Biden and Hillary Clinton? It's not. It's, I guess, slight differences.
No.
And there's differences in appeal, but that's all nonsense. Who cares? You don't have to like her. She's not your friend. She's not coming over for dinner. And by the way, everyone who has had dinner with her thinks she's awesome. You know,
that's true. I mean, I know that Bill Clinton is such a sort of, you know, he still frustrates a lot of people consistently. But he made the point the other day, which is not worth dismissing entirely. He said, you know, who are Hillary's most fervent supporters in terms of people who, you know, are on her campaign and everything else? They're people who know her. Who are Donald Trump's most like fervent detractors, like to the level of like, I run some law practice somewhere and I don't even want a public profile, but I feel publicly obligated to say that I worked with this guy in the 80s and he's a sociopath, or I ghost wrote this guy's book and now I run like a corporate consulting practice where I help employees have higher emotional intelligence. I would probably last thing I want to be is, you know, harassed by a million, you know, sort of neo-Nazis on Twitter. But I feel it is my literal moral obligation as a human to say that this is a threat to the viability of life on the planet. I mean, you could learn something there.
Yeah, right. All of it is revealing. And you were going to talk about Bernie Sanders, because I think that. Yeah, so play your clip, because I want to make sure.
We'll get to this clip before, because I know you got to run soon. But Bernie Sanders basically is on Morning Joe, and you know, the other irony of this from our side is that I think that Bernie Sanders is the one who, in the general, has been consistently making the most sort of sound case for work for broader structural reforms and, of course, you know, support Hillary in the short term. So here he is responding to a question on Morning Joe by New York Times Jeremy Peters about protest voting in this election.
A surprisingly high number of young voters, like a third, are voting for third party candidates. And I think a lot of that has to do with the fact that, you know, they don't remember Ralph Nader, right? They don't remember the effect that can have on a general election with the two party candidates. So what is your pitch to them?
Good. I mean, that's a very good question. And I think the answer is, look, I was a third party candidate. I began my career running as a third party, getting 2% of the vote. And then I got 1% of the vote. So I know a little bit about third party. I'm the longest serving independent in the history of the U.S. Congress. But I think that before you cast a protest vote, because either Clinton or Trump will become president, think hard about it. This is not a governor's race. It's not a state legislative race. This is the presidency of the United States. And I would say to those people out there who are thinking of the protest vote, think about what the country looks like and whether you're comfortable of 4 years of a Trump presidency. And I would suggest to those people, let us elect Hillary Clinton as president. And the day after, let us mobilize millions of people around the progressive agenda, which, by the way, was passed, as you know, in the Democratic platform. We worked very hard on that. The most progressive platform in the history of American politics, and say to Secretary Clinton, let us work together to implement that platform. That's where we got to go.
Ben.
Yeah. So Bernie Sanders was the first candidate in my lifetime. It didn't sound basically the first candidate in my lifetime. It didn't sound like he was running for president, who seemed candid, straightforward, with unimpeachable honesty and integrity. And understandably, the millions of people who voted for him and supported him did so with a degree of enthusiasm that matched the enthusiasm that was felt for Barack Obama in 2008.
Yes.
He matters. He made a difference. He took a principled stand. He's a principled guy. Even if you look at this through the prism of incredibly cynical glasses. But so now to disregard what that guy has to say seems so foolish and so arrogant to me. Just listen to that guy. He's right. He's right. It's so simple. You were willing to do anything for this man for 4 months. And now you're not ready to finish the job that he's asking you to do. I'm bewildered by it. And like you, many of these people are my friends, but it is a significant split. And I think if Donald Trump wins, that every American who opposed him on totally legitimate grounds, policy, personal behavior, demeanor, ostracization of others, will regret not doing everything they could to stop him. And I think especially people with an audience, and a lot of my friends have audiences, they got to step up and switch their tactic. You don't have to praise Hillary, but you got to tell people that we got to get down and get busy. And then let's challenge her in 2020 if she doesn't, when she doesn't deliver. Let's primary her in 2020. We can do that.
Right. Giving you a little Bernie impression there. That's a great point, Ben. We need to go to Vermont and march in the hills, start a guerrilla army. That would be amazing if he announced a Maoist army in the hills of Vermont.
Totally, in the hills of Vermont. Yeah.
We need struggle. Ben Mankiewicz, my friend from the Young Turks, from Turner Classic Movies, from What the Flick, from the liberal establishment.
Yeah, that's right. I'm the establishment. Yeah.
Thanks, man. I appreciate your time. I think, Ben?
Yeah, sorry.
No worries. No, I appreciate your time.
My car just started speaking for no reason.
That was that was a great L.A. way to end the conversation.
That's the only way to have a conversation in L.A. My car had something to say.
Thanks, man. Talk to you soon.
All right, thanks, Michael.
Bye. Okay, everybody. Now that we're back on YouTube, I am going to let you know about today's sponsor. And that is ZipRecruiter. Are you hiring but don't know where to post your job to find the best candidate? Posting your job in one place is not enough to find quality candidates. If you want the perfect hire, you need to post jobs on all top job sites. And now you can. With ZipRecruiter, you can post your job to 100-plus job sites, including social media networks like Facebook and Twitter, all with a single click. Find a candidate in any city or industry nationwide. Just post once and watch your qualified candidates roll into ZipRecruiter's easy-to-use interface. No juggling emails or calls to your office. Quickly screen candidates, rate them, hire the right person fast. Find out today why ZipRecruiter has been used by over 1 million businesses. And right now you can post jobs on ZipRecruiter for free by going to ZipRecruiter.com/majority. That's ZipRecruiter.com/majority. One more time. Give it a try now for free. Go to ZipRecruiter.com/majority. Matt will put a link on the Majority Report blog. We're going to go to the fun half where we have a lot of sound. We have these stories on white phosphorus in Yemen, the military deal with Israel. If there's any updates on the situation arising out of the terrorist attacks in New York, although obviously terrorist attack in New York, we top-lined it, and in Minnesota as well. And we have plenty of sound for you. You know how Reince Priebus, you know how I impersonate him like a guy from Fargo? Well, we were talking about this morning in the office. He's kind of at that point in the movie where like the quote-unquote nice guy has gotten backed into a corner, and he's kind of like showing you he's really an ornery little fucker. So we got some sound of that. We've got what else we got? We got a Trump surrogate, even as they're trying to put birtherism away. He's saying, no, it isn't about a literal place of birth. It's just about otherness in general. That's great. We've got some Seattle high school football team taking the knee for the game. Wow, Kaepernick has really set this off. And we have some from our favorite libertarian, neo-Victorian airhead, Gary Johnson. So that is all in the fun half of the Majority Report. See you on the flip side, members.